Welcome to the Painesville Assembly of God podcast. We're always encouraged to know God is working through this ministry to touch lives. So if you have a story to share of how God is working in your life, please let us know by sending us an email at info@painesvilleag.com. Now prepare your heart to hear a word from God today.
Man, I am so privileged and honored. For the past 7 months, Lauren and I, my wife, have been here and just been ministering. And so we are blessed, and I want to say thank you so much because this church is not just a church, it's a family. And so we love being a part of this. I get the pleasure and the honor today as Pastor Aaron, like was mentioned before, he is on a little bit of an R&R trip with his wife and kids. And I just want to say a few things. I wanted to say thank you guys again for everything. Man, what an honor it is to work with Pastor Aaron. What an honor it is to serve this church. What an honor it is to be a part of what God is doing here. Because God has laid some amazing plans and visions on Pastor Aaron and has laid some incredible insight into him. And it is just a super privilege for me to be able to come alongside him and work with him as he casts this vision for the community and everything that he's doing here. Just a few things to let you know about me. I like illustrations when I preach, when I talk, but every illustration has flaws. So there's a lot of theologians in this room. A lot of you guys will come up to me and say, "You know, biblically, I'm not sure if that really means..." So I just want to let you know, I'm aware that there are flaws in my illustrations that I use today. I also, as a speaker, I like to speak from weakness. And when I say that, that means that what I talk about, I go through. And so I don't have it all together. I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything about the topics, but these are situations that I've been going through. And this topic today is something that I deal with on a daily level, of something that I struggle with and push through and say, you know what? I don't know the answers, but I know the God that does. And so I just want to let you know that some of this stuff, this is kind of, I don't have the answer. So if you come up to me and talk to me about it, I'm not always going to have every answer for you. But I do believe that God has some incredible insight that he wants to pour in today. I want to kind of go off. We've been talking about our core values as a church, and one of the core values that we talked about last week was missions. And see, this main theme is what I want to talk about today, and it's this, that it's not enough just to know about God. We need to have an encounter with him. He needs to be moving in us and through us to our neighbors. It's not just enough to know about him. Yes, I come to church, I know about him. I know everything that he's written in this book. I understand that. But it's not enough just to know about him. He has called us to have an encounter with him, to interact with him on a daily level. Brennan Manning said this famous line, and if you've been around church long enough, man, I've heard this line so many times, but I love it. It says, "The biggest cause of atheism..." Atheism meaning not believing in God, not adhering to any religious value or anything. "The biggest cause of atheism today are those that acknowledge Jesus with their lips and walk out the door and deny him by his lifestyle." They say something with his lips, but they go out the door and deny him by the way that they live, by the decisions that they make, by the comments that they put on Facebook, by the gestures that they say to the person who just cut them off. Biggest cause of atheism. I tell you what, it's something that's so important to me. And you think about it, because I believe that we live in this world. By the way, I'm also a walker. I can't stand still. I'm a walker. So the biggest cause of atheism is those that say something but do something else. The thing is, we live in this world of duality. We live in this world where we show our best and we hide the rest. Where we say something on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or something in the newspaper, and yet we live something completely different. See, there's so many things that we struggle through, because here's the fact. We live in a world that's hungry for the approval and acceptance. They don't know where that's coming from, but they're hungry for approval and acceptance. And see, this is the sad truth. And because I work with youth and young adults, 40% of ages 11, 12, and 13-year-olds, 40% are involved in something called sexting. And that is sending nude photographs to one another. And I thought, that's absurd. There's no way that 11, 12, and 13-year-olds, 40% would be involved in that. And then Lauren and I went to the mall. And as we were walking by the mall, these two girls fall in this age range, mentioning, talking about, "Man, I can't believe he wants a nude photo. I know, I already gave him one." Just walking past. And Lauren goes, did you hear that? I said, I can't believe it. Just, they're so casual walking around talking about in public something that of that standard. And of that 40%, 30% of those are involved in sexual issues even greater than that. And so it's one of these things that we live in a world that's hungry for approval and acceptance. This is another sad fact. You're like, man, you're starting off with a lot of sad facts here. But this is another statistic of the average age now. The average age now of pornography exposure is 8. And so we're realizing that the sins of the fathers, the people that this was exposed to when you're adults, and you think, oh, this is just stuff that is dealing with adults, it's all of a sudden this approval and this need for acceptance is being siphoned down into our children, into our children's children. And all of a sudden it's hitting at a younger age to where they're not understanding what this is even happening, why they're even into this, but because somebody ahead of them said, you know what, man, I need approval. I need to find acceptance by any means possible. And so they turn to everything else. But I would argue this, that our world doesn't need love of acceptance. They need a love of providence. They need to have us love them, not with this love of acceptance of, hey, it's cool, man. You know, you do what you need to do. No, but they need to have us love them with this love that says, you know what? God created you for something so much better. And that this providence is encountering God. That's what providence means, is encountering God. And so this world doesn't need us to accept them and love them by that, but they need us to love them with the love of providence, saying, you know what? I love you because of who God is in me and who God has called you to be. See, often we're so worried about whether someone likes us instead of whether they encounter God through us. In our dual society of social media, of saying one thing of, oh man, I got the best husband in the world. Look at what he brought me. Oh man, my children are amazing. Look at what they've done. Oh man, I read this verse in the Bible. Look how awesome that is. And all of a sudden we go off and we do something completely different. And people are saying, what? And it's this idea that this dual society, it's not cutting it. This dual life that we tend to live, that I fall into, is not cutting it. And John Maxwell, a leadership guru for years, said this one thing that's haunted me. He said, you teach what you know, but you reproduce what you are. You can teach what you know, you can say all the right things, but you reproduce who you are. And so my question is, are we producing people that are falling in love and enraptured with the love of Christ and what he's doing, or not? So I want to talk about this. As what are we reproducing? As a parent, what are you reproducing in your children? You say, well, I don't have children. As a co-worker, what are you reproducing as a relationship with those that are working around you? As a spouse, what are you helping reproduce as the one that's next to you? You know, you think about these things, the truth is everyone has somebody following them. Whether you say you're a parent or not, guess what? You are parenting somebody. You are influencing somebody, spiritually or physically. You are influencing somebody, and somebody is being influenced by the way that you are living. Everyone is parenting someone. And so everyone on this planet has a chance to have God interact with others around them through them. And so the question is our lifestyle drawing people to Jesus or pushing them away? You know, this is something that we constantly have to remind ourselves of every day. And you might say, you know, Donnie, that's great and all, and I understand that, but you don't understand what I'm going through. You don't understand the kind of issues I have with my husband, with my boyfriend. You don't understand my relationship struggles. You don't understand the doctor's report that I just got. You don't understand the financial stress that I'm under, that I have my credit cards maxed out. You don't understand. Once I get this stuff under control, I'll jump on that, man. I'll be all about it. I'll be involved in every outreach. I'll give to the church. Once I have enough money, I'll be given to everything. You know, you don't understand. Once I get there, Donnie, once I get this stuff under control, man, I'll be all about it. That'll be great. And I would challenge you with this. And this is easy to say, and it's so hard often to actually live out, is often we come to God, God, heal me. God, help me with my finances. God, do this. God, mend my relationship. And God's saying, man, instead of telling me about your storm, start telling your storm about me. Because it says in James, for you to rebuke the devil, for you to do this, because it's all about this battle that we face. Is one of those things that we got to start telling our mountains, hey, you know what? My God is greater than anything you can throw at me. You know what? This relationship of mine that I'm struggling through, you know what? My God loves me no matter what. And my God is the great mender. You know this cancer that I'm facing? My God is the great physician. And by his stripes, I am healed. So cancer, you better step back because I'm about to launch right at you, right? You know, we talk to our finances, you know, God is greater than any need that we could ever face, and I believe that my God provides everything that I need. And so all of a sudden, I would challenge you, for those that say, man, I'm facing this struggle, I'm going through this issue with my spouse, I'm doing that. You know what? They can see God, and how you handle this situation is the biggest platform for them seeing God's grace through you. It's bigger than anything than when you have it all figured out and when you have it all together. It's bigger than that. When you're dealing with a struggle and you're going through that, God's grace is more than sufficient. It's more than enough for you. And so all of a sudden, people see God's glory revealed to you. And we just need to realize that, guess what? I want to speak this word of encouragement. God has something good in store for you. God works those things that were intended for evil for good, that for those that love him. And for those of you that feel like you've lost hope, man, my college I went to, ORU, Oral Roberts University, Oral Roberts used to say something incredible. He used to always say, something good is going to happen to you. So you better expect a miracle. You better come expecting a miracle. You better come saying, you know what, God, something good is going to happen to me today. And so I want to reiterate that all of us are influencing somebody. And so we all have this mandate to understand that, God, what am I influencing? Am I drawing people closer to you or pushing them away? I got three chairs up here this morning, and I would argue that these three chairs represent different ideals, different values, different decision-making processes. These represent basically different relationships with God in one sense or another. And I would argue that most of us here today, probably all of us, find ourselves in one of these three chairs. And that you might not be happy with the chair that you're in, but I want to let you know that you don't have to stay in the chair that you're in. And that these chairs represent not just different places, but they represent different generations. And I'm not just talking about family generations, even though that is a huge part of it. But I'm talking about spiritual generations, who you're influencing spiritually, who's getting influenced by you, who's thus influencing somebody else. Because most likely you were influenced by somebody and you saw something in their life saying, man, God did something in their life and that's incredible and I want to know more about that. They influenced you spiritually, whether they were related to you or not. And so that's what these chairs over here represent. And so the question is, where are you sitting? And where are your kids sitting? Where are your coworkers sitting? And where are your spouses sitting? And where's your neighbor sitting? Because if you have a big influence in their life, if spiritually you're having an influence in their life, they're sitting in that chair because of where you're sitting. Wherever you're sitting influences where your children are sitting, where your neighbor is sitting. So that's the question. Where are you sitting today? And this idea comes from the book of Joshua. Joshua, this great, great man of God, you know, he came after Moses when Moses left and went up to heaven. And Joshua was like, all right, so I guess, you know, God said, you're in charge. And he's like, oh my goodness. I love that line in the beginning. It says, be strong and courageous. Don't get discouraged. Man, what an awesome verse. But later on in the last chapter of Joshua, and that's where we'll look today, Joshua 24, he addresses the Israelites, and this is right before his dying days, and he says this, 24 verse 15, now if you are unwilling to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve. And he goes on to list several different gods and stuff. He goes, but as for me and my house, as for me and my children, we are going to serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And then a couple verses down in 31, it says, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, meaning his children, and had known all the work that the Lord did for Israel. See, here's the thing that's important, and had known all the work that the Lord had did. Joshua sat in chair one. Chair one is this fully committed, understanding God is impacting his life and not only moving in him, but through him. He saw the miracles of God. He saw armies fall. He saw these things happen that he goes, there's no way this could happen without God. He understood, he knew God, and he saw miracles happen because they happened through him and they happened to him. And this was an incredible relationship with God. His children were thus generation two, chair two. And it says that they knew of the works. And so that means that they didn't necessarily experience them quite like Joshua did, but they knew of them. They heard about them. They were raised in that family that, man, there are some incredible things that happened. And so that's what it said generation two, chair two is. But then just two chapters away, flip over to Judges. Judges chapter 2, verse 7, it says, the people worshiped the Lord all the days of Joshua, chair one, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, chair two, generation two, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And then Judges 2, verse 10 says right here, moreover, that whole generation was gathered to the ancestors, talking about generation two, chair two, they all died, and another generation grew up after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done. See, generation three, chair three, they didn't even know about what God did at Jericho, at what God did at the Red Sea. They didn't even know about that. They didn't know God, and they didn't even know about his works. They knew nothing about that. See, here's the thing. Chair one, and you're not going to be able to read this sign, but that's okay. It'll be up on the screen. Chair one, the word is commitment. They're committed to what God is doing. They're committed to seeing God do some incredible things in them and through them. They're committed to being a part of what God's doing and his advancement on this earth. They're saying, God, I don't just want to believe it. I want to live it out. And see, the thing about chair one people, they're not perfect. And they know it. They're the first ones to say, God, I am nothing without you. God, I can't do anything if you don't go with me. God, it is only by your grace and by your strength that I can do this. And chair one people gladly admit to that, saying, God, I can do nothing. I just posture myself and say, you know, humbly, God, thank you for loving me. They understand how amazing God is. They understand this fact that God is God and they are not. And so chair one people catch that concept. But chair two people, the word is compromise. Chair two people, the word is compromise. They're born again. They know God. But they're not quite as sold out as chair one. They're not quite as buying into it as chair one. They're the ones that grew up in the church because they grew up under chair one, possibly. And they know a lot of the stuff. But they're not quite as sold out as chair one people are. They're the ones that, I'm going to step on some toes, by the way. They're the ones that often criticize. Man, the worship's too loud. It's too soft. It's too long. Pastor preaches too short. He preaches too long. Where's the food? I don't like the coffee. This lighting's off. This carpet's really ugly. Does it have to be this early? Can we shorten it a little bit? Does it have to be really, right? We find ourselves, chair two people, generation two, and I can say this because I find myself in this often. And I used to struggle with that a lot because they find themselves always criticizing, always analyzing. You know, does this really happen? Are they really saved? Are they really going into this? You know, I don't know. But see, the thing is, they're not quite as sold out. And here's the thing about chair two people. And I, oh man, this is me. This is something I struggle with. Is I get concerned about my position. I get concerned about, am I doing enough things? Am I doing the right things? Did I read enough the Bible? Did I worship loud enough? Did I raise my hands? Did I do all that? See, and it's called a comparison trap. Because I'm worried about my position in comparison to those that are around me. well, I'm better than chair three, so I'm doing good. But man, chair one, he's clapping super loud and he's really getting into worship. So I got to start even louder. Praise the Lord, right? And we get this comparison trap of saying, I got to do better. 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 And the thing is, guess what the difference is? They're more concerned about position than they are about posture. They're more concerned about the comparison than they are about the relationship. And see, they're not perfect either, but they hide it. I don't want people to know. I don't want people to see this. I'm not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to say that sort of stuff in church. I'm not supposed to wear that at church. We're going to church, right? We're not allowed to listen to that sort of music in church. We're not allowed to say that. And they fall into this whole thing about trying to hide it. They're the ones that are concerned, most of them are concerned, and I say most of them, most of us are concerned about this, all right, how do I get ahead? What is it that, yeah, God has plans to prosper me, all right, so I'm going to go to school, I got to get this degree. What degree is going to get me the most money? How am I going to get the job that makes me the most happy? How am I going to do this? And they're all concerned about these situations where God's saying, you're missing it. And Christianity is merely just an aspect of their life. They grew up in it. They know the Bible in and out. I'll tell you what, these guys make great Bible quizzers because they know the Bible in and out. Because they thought that that's what they had to do. If I'm going to be a good Christian, I got to read and memorize everything. I got to do this. They were raised in chair one, and they often know more of the Bible than chair one people do because they're like, this is what I have to do if I'm going to be good. And it's all about doing, right? And it's just merely an aspect of who they are. Chair three now. The word for chair three is conflict. It's often this internal struggle that they deal with. This thing of they're not really born again. They're not really sure if they really want to take that step of faith. They don't really, you know, want to do that. They don't know. Often they're dragged to church by chair two people. You know, they don't want to be here. They just play on their phones. They try to find comfortable ways of how do I fall asleep but still look like I'm listening or praying, right? They're not perfect. Chair three people aren't perfect, and they don't know what to do about it. They're the ones that say, you know, I know I'm not perfect, so I'm not good enough, because they often look at chair two. Because that's the generation before them. They often look at the spiritual generation before them and say, I'm not good enough. They're doing all these things. They're doing all this stuff. And I'm not good enough. I can't ever do that. What's the point in trying to even do this? And see, often sometimes you chair three people, that video up there might look like what it looked like in a typical Sunday morning. They drive to church and they're going and mom and dad are arguing, fighting, shut up, you know, yeah. And then all of a sudden they pull in the driveway there and the dad looks at the mom, shut up, we're at church. Okay. He comes around and he gets to the door for the mom and he waves, he holds the big Bible. Oh, bless you. It's so great to be here. Man, it's so awesome. They get in the church and you're sitting there and your dad or your mom and then all of a sudden the pastor calls up your dad. Hey, brother, can you come share your testimony? He comes up here. And everyone knows that spiritual walk, right? This, you know, church, when I was 11 years old, the Lord saved me, and it was the best decision I ever made. And if you haven't made that decision, I encourage you to do so. It'll be the best thing you ever made. And then the pastor asks him to pray, and he gives this most amazing, eloquent prayer. And you're sitting there the whole time saying, what in the world? Who is that guy? What? And then he sits down. And then you go back home. He helps mom back into the car. And they pull out of the drive or out of the church parking lot. And how could you ever say something like that? I can't believe you would even look at me like this. I can't believe this. And the argument continues. They get home. He just walks in because no one's there to see him get the door that time. Throws the Bible on the dresser and where it's going to sit until next week, where he yells at the kids, who stole my Bible? Where's my Bible at? Because he hasn't used it all week. Sits down for lunch. Thank you, Jesus, for this food. Amen. All right, pass the potatoes, please. And all of a sudden, there's this duality that chair three sees in chair two's life. All of a sudden, it's this thing that they say, I don't want any part of that. And this is the sad truth. is because chair two tries so hard to look like chair one. Often, chair three thinks that everyone in church is chair two. They don't even realize that there's people that encounter God every day, that there's people that live out miracles every day, that there's people that have this amazing relationship with God. All they see is this dual life of chair two. They see this compromise, and that's all they see. Because at church, they look the same. At church, everyone's trying to look exactly the same. And so this chair three has this issue. Now, I got a couple helpers. If I could have Sean and if I could have Jim, if you guys could come on up here to help me out. These guys are incredible. Can we just give a round of applause for them as they come? What awesome helpers they are. I told Lauren, you know, I'm excited to have them in church. She's like, are you going to have, you know, some of your youth or students? I go, you know, I always use students. I want to use some old people this time. So I asked Sean. And then I said, I need some spry people up there. So I got Jim up here. So that's what I decided to do. Sean, why don't you go ahead and stand right here. And Jim, stand at your post there. And see, this is what happens. Can you guys just go ahead and lift up this thing? The jar with the white powder in it. Don't worry, it's baking soda. Don't get excited. But this idea is that this is our lives often. These are our lives. And this represents, guess what? This is chair one and chair two. And this represents their life with Christ. They got the white stuff. They got Jesus inside of them. And you know, they're going to heaven. Both of them are. But this is what happens. See, chair two, can you just pick that up and just pour it into there? Chair two, just keep pouring, keep pouring, keep pouring, keep pouring, keep pouring, keep pouring, keep pouring. Oh, there you go. See, all of a sudden, chair two, that white liquid that looked just like this other liquid, this clear liquid, see, it just cloudies it up. This represents this liquid that he had. This represents your habits, your thoughts, your life, you know, who you really are, your heart. And see, all of a sudden, when mixed with Jesus, it just kind of cloudies it up. It just gets really kind of nasty in there. And chair three sees that. And it's like, why would I ever want anything like that? It's like, that's just cloudy and nasty. But see, chair one over here, their life and their habits and their heart, can you just pick that up and just pour? Just keep pouring and pouring. See, just keep pouring. Just keep pouring. Same amount of liquid. Keep pouring. Keep pouring. Same amount of liquid. All right, you can stop. But all of a sudden, there's a different reaction. There you go.
I want all of it.
All of it. You want all of it. There's a different reaction that happens. They look the exact same. But guess what? Oh, what helpers. There you go. But guess what? What happens is their lives represent something completely different. Right? What's on the inside is what connects with God and makes it to where he overflows, to where he connects with something on everybody around him. Everything around him is impacted because of the way that he lives his life and his heart after Christ. He's chair one. Whereas chair two is merely clouding up the water. You guys can go ahead and be seated. Thank you so much. Let's give it up for the mess makers. See, chair one and chair two people, they sound the same. Chair two people, though, you could tell a little bit of a difference. Chair two people say, man, when I was in high school, I went on this missions trip, and it was incredible. It so impacted my life, you know. And this one time, Pastor Aaron preached this message, and it was really good. And you know, a couple years ago, Convoy of Hope came, and I was a part of that, and it was really cool. That's chair two people. Chair one people say, you know, man, earlier today I was reading Philippians and it just changed my life. It was incredible what just happened. And, you know, last week I was at this grocery store and I didn't have a lot of money, but this lady in front of me couldn't pay. And so I was able to help pay for her groceries. And I just told her a little bit about the church that I go to. And, oh, you know, this Easter outreach that's coming up. I don't know, my kids were playing with these neighbor kids. I was just like, hey, you guys want to come? And they couldn't make it. But I said, hey, if I pick you up, could you come? And I've been just praying over it, and I'm so excited. I'm picking up, you know, six other neighbor kids now and bringing them to this Easter outreach. See, here's the thing. Chair two only knows stories from the past. Oh, back then it was great. Oh, it was awesome. Chair one lives those stories every day. They love them every day. They're constantly being poured into, and they're constantly overflowing into everyone around them. They're impacting the people that they are constantly around. Whereas chair two people are merely just clouding up the water and merely clouding up everything. And the difference was, by the way, this was water for those that are in chemistry or any time making a volcano for your kid. Water with baking soda does nothing. Vinegar with baking soda is awesome, right? Difference is they look the same. The inside is completely different. And so the question is, where are we looking and what do we look like? Chair one lives miracles. Chair two saw and heard about the miracles. They believe in the miracles. Man, I know miracles can happen. They believe in them. Chair three doesn't know the miracles because they haven't really seen any of them. They think that church is all about doing what's right, all about these rules and all about this stuff. And all of a sudden, you get this thing. Because guess what? Rules without relationship equals rebellion. And so all of a sudden, they have no relationship with God, and so they don't want any part of this, because that's just a bunch of baloney. Why would I ever want to be a part of that? Because I don't see any value to it. I don't understand it. And so if we desire to be chair one people, we do not live the way we do for God's love. Trying to do everything for it. I just got to be good enough. I got to read more of the Bible. I got to do more of this stuff. Pastor, every week gives me these next steps. I got to do more and more and more so that I can get more of God's love. We don't live the way we do for God's love. We live the way we do from God's love. With the understanding that, man, God loved us and he saved us. And so we're called to impact the next generation around us. And chair one's value is not found in what they do. It's found in the love of God. So naturally we ask, how do we make the move? How do we move from chair three to chair two? Or how do we move from chair two to chair one? How do we get out of this chair that I'm in? I want to get to the chair where I encounter God on a daily level. You know, and as chair two people, as a chair two person, I naturally say, okay, do I need to read the Bible more? Do I need to go to more small groups? Do I need to worship harder? Do I need to listen to more worship music? What does it take to encounter God every day? I need to do some more things. I need to do. It's just a bunch of doo-doo. See, it's often like, the thing is, we're supposed to follow Jesus. Simple. Follow Jesus. How do you do that? You love God and you love people, right? Jesus talked about that. Love God, love people. But often we hear that and we're like this child. And some of you parents have done this. When you tell your kid to go clean their room, what do you want to happen? They want to clean the room. I want you to clean your room. Go clean your room. Now, if your kid comes back to you and it's like, hey, I heard what you said. And I not only heard what you said, I memorized it. And I think that if you say more, I could probably memorize more. And so I heard what you said. And you said, go clean your room. And I bet if you give me some more, I bet I could memorize that. And it would be awesome. Or kid comes back and said, hey, I heard what you said. And so I got a bunch of friends. We got together in the small group. I called it a life group just because we're spending life together. And I said, what would happen if I went and cleaned my room? What would happen if we really went and cleaned our rooms? And we've been discussing this for weeks. Man, Dad, I mean, it's just been thinking, what would actually happen? Or, you know, you go up and, you know, I looked up in the Greek what it means to go clean your room. And all of a sudden, we laugh at that, but that's how we do it with God. God says, follow Jesus. Love God, love people. Now, what would it look like if we loved people? Man, that would be crazy. Let's get in a group and talk about this. You know, what would it look like if we really loved God? You know, man, let's memorize some more scripture on that. And God's saying, love God, love people. You say, okay, that seems simple. But when you start to love God and you love people, what does that mean? You despise mediocrity. You despise that cloudiness. You despise that feeling of compromise, of saying one thing and living the other. And all of a sudden, this is what has to happen. Because guess what? God says, I hate lukewarm. I spit you out. We got to get to that place. And so we need a heart check. We need a heart check. Where it says, I don't want to just believe it. I don't want to just believe in what you say, God. I don't want to just have it memorized, God. I mean, I don't want to just say one thing. I don't want to just believe it. I want to live it. I want to live out everything that God says. Man, God says we can heal people. God says that we will be financially prosperous. God says that our relationships don't have to be in shambles. God, I don't want to just believe that. I want to live it. And so all of a sudden, though, we're like, oh, man, I don't understand. It takes a heart check. Psalms 139, 23, it says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. If there is any wicked way in me, see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting life." See, I want the generation after me, that comes after me, to know God, to know God's work, because they saw it reflected in my life. I want the generation to see it reflected. I don't want them to say, oh yeah, you know, I think it might happen. No, I want to see, man, when I was with Donnie, he talked to this clerk at McDonald's, and all of a sudden he was inviting her to church. That was crazy. You know, Donnie got pulled over for speeding, and I was in the car, and he didn't get mad. He just realized that, hey, I'm not perfect, and I know it. And they saw God in action. They saw a lifestyle that was changed. And so how do you do that? It's not about doing all these right things. It's about getting this heart check and saying, God, I'm all about posture, not position. God, I humble myself. God, you are so much better and greater than anything that I could ever imagine or do. But so often we get frustrated as parents, as influencers, and we go, no, we need to get them saved. We need to get them to do this. And we need to, they're doing all the wrong things. They're playing video games in church. They're doing all this stuff. But guess what? And I want you to catch this, and some of you guys might get upset. We're not in people's lives to win them. We're not in people's lives to change them. We are in people's lives to love them as we are loved. And we must be first enraptured by that love before they could ever catch a glimpse of it, before they could ever be consumed by God's passion. And so often as a youth pastor, people ask, well, how do we keep young adults, and how do we keep the youth from leaving the church? How do we, you know, they're always, we lose them. We're always losing our young adults, and they come up with all these systems. Let's get them involved. Let's put them on the worship team. Let's do all this stuff. You know that there's chair two people that are greeters. There's chair two people that are on the worship team. There's chair two people that, I hate to say this, but there's some chair two pastors that just live doing everything. They're just all about doing, doing, doing. And so often we think that if we can get those young people connected and doing the right thing, then all of a sudden it's going to happen. But guess what? That's not going to happen. And there's this quote that I heard from a pastor that I thought was incredible. We don't lose teens or young adults from our church. We lose them when they're children. They just can't leave until they're a teen or a young adult. And so yes, churches should do everything to connect and inspire and bring hope and say, man, serving God is one of the most incredible things ever, but that's just a small part of it. There's a 50-year study done, and what happened was they were doing it on how does a child receive Christ. And what they found out was most children receive Christ, grew up in a third chair home where their parents could care less about God, didn't want anything to do God, but they got connected with a first chair children's ministry or youth ministry where they saw that there is a real impact that God can have through people. And it's not just something you say, but it's something that you live out every day. And so they got connected, and that's where a lot of them got saved. Or they grew up in chair one household to where the love of God literally, and this is what the report said, I thought this was so cool, would seep through their pores because of the way that their parents loved God. That they encountered God on a daily level and they saw God, and it was an incredible experience. And so they got saved. Hardly any over 50 years ever received Christ growing up with chair two parents. Parents that were apathetic, parents that were compromising, parents that said one thing, did another. Do as I say, not as I do. We often use that phrase. And that was so humbling. And I'm going to step on some more toes here. If you're dragging your kids to church, that's an issue. Now, there is a place where you need to bring your kids, and sometimes they don't want to come. I understand that. Sometimes your coworkers, your neighbors don't want to come. But if you have consistently brought them over and over and over, and they have never changed, and they are constantly saying, I don't want to go to church. I don't want to go to church. I hate church. I hate church. Guess what? They haven't seen the benefit of it in your life. So they don't know that anything can really happen here. Man, I stepped on some toes there. I know. But this is the truth, is their attitude, if that's a consistent behavior over time, I'm not saying once or twice, I'm saying over time, that's a consistent behavior, their attitude reflects your leadership. And that stinks because I find myself often in chair two, and that's unacceptable for my son Obadiah or for my son Samson. And I go, I do not want them to see this duality of, oh, dad preaches a great message. He gets people up and people laughing. It's great. It's funny. But he comes home and he's a snot to mom. Man, he is all sorts of mean. He's always listening to this junky music. He never talks to me. He never hangs out. He doesn't do that. And that's unacceptable. So my biggest fear is that chair two people typically produce chair three results. So the second thing, the first thing is heart check. Search me, oh God. Find out if there's anything in me. God, I humble myself. Open me up. I'm not perfect, and I know it. I'm not going to hide it. Second thing is focus check, that we would have new eyes and new ears, because it takes time to combat mediocrity. It's a marathon. It's not just a one-time deal. But I want my cry to be that of Paul's and says, follow me. As I follow Christ, I'm not going to look to the right or to the left. I'm not going to look that way. I'm going to keep my eyes on the prize. I'm going to go after it. I'm going to persevere. I'm going to forget the past. Yeah, I messed up in the past. Yeah, I messed up yesterday. But you know what? My God is greater than any screw up that I'm going to have. And I'm going to keep pursuing. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep striving. I'm going to keep chasing after God. Follow me as I follow Christ, because my eyes are on Christ, and that's my desire. So what are you focusing on? Are you focusing on, oh man, I've missed my devotions today. How could I miss it? Oh, I'm such a horrible person. Hey, I didn't see you lifting your hands. Are you okay? I didn't see you lifting your hands in worship today. Are you sure you're okay? You know, God wants us to lift our hands, okay? And so it's this idea that, what are you focusing on? What is our focus? Deuteronomy 30, 19 through 20, it says, today, I have given you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. Now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. Oh, that you would choose life so that you and your descendants might live. You can make this choice by loving the Lord your God, obeying him, and committing yourself to him. Remember what we started with. It's not enough just to know about God. We're called to encounter him. To see him moving in us, to see him moving through us, to see this life that's supposed to be exciting. Man, if your Christian life is dull and boring, you're living the wrong life. Jesus said in John 10:10, you know, I've come so that you can have life to the fullest. Man, if you're like, oh, I have to go to church today. Man, this life is, oh God. And you are so beat up and worn out. I'm telling you, you're missing something. Because God doesn't want you just all burnt out and beat up and say, yeah, I love Jesus. Isn't he great? I don't know if he is. Man, you look horrible, right? It's this idea that, man, God has called us to live life full, to live it abundantly. And yet we buy into this stuff of, oh, it's just the cross I gotta bear. It's horrible. I'm always sick. I'm always poor. I'm always in relationships in and out. You know, God just created me so people would learn how to get out of relationships, I guess. See, if we're going to change our chairs, we can't change for more of God's love. If I just do more, I'll get more of God's love. We got to change our chairs because we have an understanding and realization of who our God is. And we change from God's love. We don't change for it. So the worship team is going to come on up here. And our altar team, you guys can go ahead and start headed up. But this is what I want us to do. You're saying, well, You gave me like no take-home steps, Donnie, to like put into practice of reading more chapters or anything of value. And I'm telling you, it's not about that. And it's so hard because I wrestled with this and wrestled with this and wrestled with this. And I just kept telling Lauren, I don't know how in the world to end this because I'm not really telling them to do anything. And that's the point. We're so consumed with doing stuff. We're so consumed with, what is it that I gotta do? What is it I gotta do? What is it I gotta do? And God's saying, love me, follow me. Love God, love people. So how do we do that? Oops. How do we do that? We do that by saying, God, I'm going to posture myself before you. I'm going to say, God, take all of me and nothing less. God, I know that I am nothing without you, but in you I can do some incredible, mighty things. And so if you find yourself, maybe you find yourself in chair three and you're like, yeah, what you're talking about, I had no idea people actually could experience life. You know, I just see, whether it was your folks or whether it was other people in your life, you know, I just saw, you know, they said one thing, but they did another. Maybe you're in chair three and you need to accept Christ for the first time and say, man, I want that. If I'm really supposed to live life to the fullest and this is supposed to be something exciting and amazing, man, I want that. I don't want to just be, you know, struggling. I know I'm not perfect, but I don't know what to do. So if you find yourself there, man, we're going to, in a few moments, invite you to come forward and say, man, we'd love to pray with you. We'd love to ask Jesus into our hearts, and we'd love to see you accept Christ for the first or second time, and that'd be an awesome experience. But maybe you're in chair two, and you're saying, man, I don't know what to do because I find myself in this struggle going around and around the mountain and saying, God, why me? Why me? Why me? And see, I grew up in a chair one home. My parents, man, I saw it. Their life was incredible. I saw God's miracles. Man, I come from an amazing legacy. But I found myself in chair two just going through the motions. Oh, my parents did that, right? My parents are lifting their hands. I lift my hands. I find that with Obadiah. You know, we don't really change after so many years. He's now 3 years old. I dance a certain way. He dances a certain way. I lift my hands. He lifts his hands. You know? And yet, we find ourselves doing that. Somebody's doing that? Okay, I can do that. And we lose the heart of it. I'm not saying you can't raise your hands or clap. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, what's the heart behind that? It's a heart check. God, search me, oh God. And so I encourage you, maybe you need to spend some time up here this morning just saying, God, search me and know my heart. Find out if there's any evil in me. Get it out. And we start all of a sudden realizing that, God, I'm not perfect and I know it. I don't want to hide it. I don't want to try to be consumed by doing all the right things. But God, I just want to love you. I just want to love your people. God, I just want to follow you. I'm tired of jumping through hoops to try to satisfy and be accepted and all this stuff. And so I would invite you, you can come up or you can stay back and just find a place to say, you know what, God, I want to search you. I want to find you. And I want you to search my heart. I want to spend some time just alone with you. And slowly, you'll start to realize that you're going to be moving from chair two to chair one. And it's a daily struggle. It's something we have to face every day. We have to deny our flesh. Gotta say, no, it's not about that. I don't read the Bible just to say I read the Bible. I read the Bible because, man, it is so awesome to see what God does. It is so incredible to see who God is. I lift my hands in worship, not because everyone else does, but I lift my hands because, man, I surrender everything to God because I ask God to fill me up. Lord, you are incredible. You are awesome, man. I clap, not because I feel like I have to help the drummer keep on beat or help, you know, the person that's tone deaf next to me learn how to do something, but I clap because, man, I am excited about what God's doing because I serve a good God. I don't serve a God that thinks something else. I serve a God that wants good things for me. That's why we do the things that we do. That's why we live the way that we live. We don't live just to be a good person. We live because we serve a good God. We serve a God that is incredible, that loves you passionately, that loves you endlessly. It doesn't matter what kind of hurt or pain that you go through. He is there for you. And he says, you know what? Just turn to me. Stop trying to fix it on your own and let me love you. So I encourage you, as we start to sing, now why don't we all, as a body, just let's stand up. Let's just all start to say, God, search me and know me. God, search me and know me. God, search me and know me. Feel free to come up if you want prayer or stay in your seats if you so desire. But God, search me and know me.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. We pray that you are encouraged and strengthened by God's word. For more information about Painesville Assembly of God, please visit PainesvilleAG.com.